a.m. The recording is going, I assume. Are the recording going? Okay. And I'm going to ask Jerry to take roll. Before he does that, I would say that the last meeting we've had was in August of last year. The agenda, as you can see, is packed. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is in light of the lack of meetings. We had a lack of, there were no meetings because we had a lack of members. So we're glad to be able to move forward. And once again, to welcoming our new members and allow us to hopefully avoid a meeting such as this where there's so much material to be digested and discussed at the meeting. And hopefully, with a little luck and cooperation, we'll get through these. So with that, Jerry, if you take roll, I appreciate it.
All right. My understanding is I have two committee members attending telephonically. Senator Coghill.
Good morning. I'm here.
And Senator Egan.
Good morning. I'm here as well.
Very good. Representative Eastman. And Representative Tuck. Yep. Member Skip Cook. Yep. Member Connor Thomas.
Here.
Member Joyce Anderson. Here. Member Deb Bancher. Here. Member Lee Holmes.
Here.
With that, we have all nine committee members present, and we have a quorum to conduct business.
Okay, thank you, Jerry. Is there anyone online for the meeting other than the people that have just identified themselves, Senator Coghill and Senator Egan?
This is Dan. Mr. Chairman, this is Dan Wayne. I'm online from Bethesda and Juneau.
Okay, Dan. It had here you were going to be in person, so I thought you were coming to Anchorage. So I take it that's not the case.
No, I couldn't make it.
Okay. All right. And for those of you who, and of course, Jerry Anderson, the administrator for the committee, is sitting here beside me. Most of you know, as we move forward throughout the day, if you would identify yourselves each time you speak, it's helpful for the record and for those of you who may not, for the people on the committee who may not know who you are. So it's helpful for that. As indicated, we've got a full agenda. The outline is as follows. We're going to have a full committee meeting. The expectation is that will last about 4 hours. We'll see. Hopefully that's the limit of it. Then there will be a Senate subcommittee meeting, which is scheduled at 12:30 p.m., I'm sorry, in this room. And then that will be followed by a House subcommittee meeting, which will also be starting approximately 1 o'clock. In this room. We've ordered lunch. That'll be brought in. We're not going to take a break in the effort to try to get through this today, as I've indicated. So with that, we'd like to welcome our new legislative members. Representative Eastman, thank you. Welcome to the committee. And to our new public members, Deb Fancher, thank you for being willing to serve, and thank you for coming today. And Lee Holmes, with an S. So, Lee Holmes, and thank you again for being willing to serve. And the bio material is contained in the packet. The first matter before us is approval of the agenda. I would take a motion to approve the agenda.
Move.
Okay. Any objection? Hearing none, the agenda is approved without objection. The next matter is approval of the minutes. The minutes are in your packet. The full committee meeting of August 18th, 2016. I would ask for a motion to approve the minutes.
So
moved by Skip Cook. Any objection? Hearing none, the minutes of the full committee meeting of August 18, 2016 are hereby approved. The next matter is the Senate subcommittee meeting, also August 18, 2016. I would ask for a motion to approve the moved by Skip Cook. Any objection to those minutes? Changes? Hearing none, motion's approved. The minutes of the Senate subcommittee of August 18, 2016 are approved. The next are the minutes of the House Subcommittee, August 18, 2016. Look for a motion. once again by Skip Cook. Seeing, hearing, no objections. Those minutes are approved. The House Subcommittee minutes of August 18, 2016. The next item on the agenda is public comment. And I would ask if there's anyone who wishes to speak to the committee. It looks fairly bare here in the auditorium. I'm not heard anybody online. It does not appear there's any comment from the public with respect to the agenda. So we'll move on to item 7. Item 7 is an election of committee chairs. This is a matter that should have been taken up earlier in the year, but wasn't for the reasons that I've given earlier. We didn't have enough people on the committee to do that. The committee chairs have to be made up of public members. Historically, what we've done is it's try to determine who is willing to serve in the various roles as committee chairs. Once again, the committee, the public members have discussed this, and I would propose the following slate, that for the House chair, Skip Cook, House vice chair, Joyce Anderson, the Senate chair would be myself, Connor Thomas, the Senate vice chair would be Lee Holmes. That's the proposed slate. Any objections, comments with respect to the proposed election of committee chairs? Seeing none, I would take a motion to approve the proposed slate.
So moved.
Moved by Lee Holmes. Any discussion, objection? Hearing, seeing none, motion carries. That's our committee chairs moving forward. What that's going to mean in reality is that the chair of the committee, the Senate chairs the committee during odd years like this year. So I'll finish out this year as chair. Next year, it would move over to Skip Cook as chair of the House committee. Moving on to item 8 on the agenda, which is the chair and staff report. The first item, it will be informal advice for Jerry Anderson. And Jerry, maybe before you go through that, just for the benefit of our new committee members, you might explain to people just exactly what that means in terms of informal advice and how is it that you come to give that advice.
And this is in under item 8 in the packet for the members. And the item that I'm going to be addressing is the 17 pages of informal advice that has been given by the administrator myself during that time period noted. And this is the opportunity for the committee to look at that. And if they have any questions concerning that informal advice or believe that there was an error in that, to address that with the committee and with the administrator. And so each of these pieces of advice should be anonymous, and you know, we don't have names attached to that, and that's the nature of the informal advice that I give. Legislators and legislative staffers can ask for that informal advice from the administrator, and this is the record of that without the names. And so if there's questions about that, I note that Joyce had addressed one of those with me. And maybe we can start with that one. Joyce, if you would identify the page number, and we can talk about that issue.
Okay,
as an
page
example.
15.
I'm sorry, again, Joyce?
Page 15.
Okay, so if you turn to page 15.
It's a very first one at the top of the page that talks about walking a district or going door to door, what I usually call. And I talked to Jerry about that, and the very last sentence says that a staffer who volunteers on non-government time to walk in the district and distribute the same newsletter is also not restricted from this activity. And so we talked about that, and I said to Jerry, well, not only on non-government time, because this was to be a legislative purpose for this particular door-to-door. So there's no reason why a staffer would have to volunteer. They could, but a staffer could also do it on government time, because it's a legislative related and not campaign related. So that was just my comment there.
And so I found this very helpful. Of course, my answer to this addressed the specific question that they asked. May I be a volunteer and do that? And the answer to that is yes. But as Joyce correctly points out, well, you don't need to be a volunteer. You could be on government time as a staffer going to do this. That is district walks, not carrying campaign information, but newsletters. And you can hand out those newsletters, not mixing the two, not mixing campaign information and your newsletters or other legislative information, contact information. But you wouldn't have to be a volunteer in this. And so I'm going to get back with that particular person who asked this question and make sure that they were aware that, yeah, you wouldn't have to be a volunteer. But that was the actual question asked of me. Hey, may I be a volunteer and do it? And of course, they could be a volunteer. And they could also be in their paid staffer role, walking through the district, handing out those newsletters that came from that legislative office. So I appreciate that from Joyce. We had a good discussion about that one. Any other questions concerning any of the items that were in the 17-page?
Page
Representative
one.
Eastman, page
so,
one.
So question number two, I noticed the question specifically dealt with primary elections, and certainly independent candidates don't have a primary election. They weren't referenced in the answer. Was there a reason they weren't referenced in the answer? Because my reading of your answer would be that it would not apply to those candidates, even though they were running for election that year.
You know, that would be a different question than what was asked, and I think that would involve more extensive analysis. I think that the question of when is a person a candidate, and are they in that campaign period, is different. You know, where it is an independent, because they're not on the ballot.
If I could comment too, as the previous administrator to the committee, it was determined that even though you are not a candidate in the primary, you are still a candidate, so all the rules apply whether you're
good
on the ballot or not.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Other questions concerning any of the advice in the 17-page management log that the committee has before them? Connor?
No, I have no other comments with respect to that. And just for those of you that are new to the committee, just so you're clear, the way these are generated is obviously people call and ask Jerry questions that he keeps track of his answers, and really the main purpose that this committee serves is to provide advice to people. What we really want people to do is call before problems arise, and this is a way that happens. Is if people have some concerns or questions about something, then they call Jerry, and he generates an answer. And then keeps track of that answer. So that's how these are generated. So, with that, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is an update from Jerry with respect to the alternate public member committee appointment. I take it there's no word on the appointment of an alternate.
Yes, I have not received any information. Of course, item has been addressed with the Chief Justice Office. And if I may go back just briefly, with regard to the informal advice given by staff, you know, that is set up by statute. That's that AS 2460-158, and so we have specific, you know, statutory authority for that, and as well as in our rules of procedure about what informal advice could be given. And for example, there's restriction on that informal advice as to, I cannot give informal advice about the actions of another. And I get that quite frequently, where they ask about, hey, is this okay? And they're asking about the actions that someone else has taken. And, of course, I cannot give that according to our rules of procedure. So there's specific rules of procedure that we've developed through the committee with regard to that informal advice. So with that, thank you for that indulgence to go back to that item.
The next item is ethics training. Once again, this is an explanation by Jerry.
And our ethics training is done on a mandatory basis for all legislators and legislative employees in those odd years in January. So, for example, we did the ethics training in January, and in the packet we give them the numbers that we actually trained on that. And so in 2016 we only had 103, and that was because those would be new staffers that had come on where we did the actual training. But this year we did 560, including 26 of those in line. We had 13 training sessions to complete that ethics training. And this, of course, is during that time. And significantly, our rules of procedure provide, and at other times determined by the committee, and we may have that come up later in our meeting today, the other times with the proposal that I have with that. And I have been approached by the House and Senate Rules Chairs to do a training specifically with regard to election-related issues and campaign-related issues and the restrictions that would be on legislators and legislative employees. And they are suggesting a training in October for that purpose, and I think that's really appropriate. When we do our ethics training in January, for example, when we did it in January 2017, the elections were over, the campaigns were pretty much wrapped up, and so it's not really relevant for the staffers or really for the legislators because they're out of that campaign mode. This October, of course, they are involved, some of those with the campaigns that are going to be on the ballot for next year. And so I think it's appropriate that we do that ethics training with regard to those issues, because now it is more relevant than it was in January for those people, both the legislators and for the legislative staffers. We had been independently looking at this for training in January, specifically for our legislators and legislative staffers right before session, and that would coincide with the ethics committee meetings that we have in January traditionally. And so I guess I'm asking the committee if there's any comment regarding that training and the administrator doing specific training with regard to election and campaign related items, both in October and in January. Again, using the authority that the committee can use other times as determined by the committee.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah, I think it would be very timely.
Thank you for that, Skip Cook.
Would that be the same training twice?
No, it would be regarding
broken
only
up.
The issues related to campaign and elections. For example, not restrictions on fundraising during sessions and special sessions. That's been a real issue where we've tried to remind legislators with regard to that requirement, what they can do in terms of staffers when they get called into the office that are of a campaign or election type nature, what should be done there, what they can handle, what can be done with their state-issued computers and other equipment.
Now, would the training in January be the same as the training in October?
Yes.
Okay. And did you have any specific dates in October? I think there's rumor of a special session that might be a problem.
Yeah, and that of course, would be at the determination of both the House and the Senate Rules Chairs when they would want that, because we're kind of under their request for that. And they had just sent me an email requesting that type of training, and we independently had thought about doing that in January of 2018.
I have a comment too. I think it's a great idea. Most of the questions that come in during the campaign season about what can and cannot be done. Maybe to expand that a little bit, instead of just having maybe legislators and staffers, maybe the legislators' campaign chair, because they are also working with the legislator on doing certain activities and so forth. And I don't know if that's a thought or not, but I know sometimes campaign chairs would call the office and ask, you know, what can I do, what can't I do? So just throwing that out for discussion.
Just in response to that, my concern would be that would be people outside the scope of the Legislative Ethics Act. But I think, you know, they are a relevant group with that.
Could that, this is Skip again, could that be set up so that it could be, so they could have access from wherever they are located in the state?
Our intention would be that it would be telephonic, yes.
Right, so they'd all have access.
So in other words, anyone could really listen in? Or are you going to be
That's where we'd want to restrict it, because as we've traditionally done our ethics training, we have not opened that up to the public because we felt like that would have a chilling effect on the discussion that occurs during that training. And so, you know, we restricted it, you know, to only individuals that we've, you know, approved.
And I agree with that comment as well. So I'm just thinking, I know campaign chairs call as well, so just threw that out as a comment.
Well, and I think that we could, you know, just arrange that, you know, they would just be pre-approved, just like with our sessions telephonically here today. You know, we control the access to who is able to call in during our executive session, and you know, we're aware of who calls in. So I think that wouldn't be an impediment to it. It's just I would have that concern, and I'd want to make sure that we're not opening it up to people. If they're having that free and open discussion, that it not go beyond the people that are being affected by it. Other comments?
Connor Thomas. I just had a note here that asking that there says someone on teleconference need to mute their phone. I assume there's it's because of some noise coming through. So if you're the person, please mute your phone. Thank you for that. Any other comments with respect to the training? Seeing none, then we'll move on to the next item, which is the ethics. I'm sorry.
Before we do that, Chair Thomas, I assume that I have that authorization from the committee then to do that other training as determined by the committee, both in October and January, as described here?
My sense is there's no objection from anybody for that, yeah.
All right, thank you for that.
Yeah, I don't think it's the kind of thing that would require a formal motion to allow you to move forward on. So the next item is ethics disclosure, and then once again, Jerry and maybe Janice will report on the disclosures that we've received this year thus far.
In your packet today, you should have the disclosures that were filed in 2016, and we're basically just providing those to give you an idea of the raw numbers that we did receive with disclosures. That being an election year, total of 456. We also gave historical comparisons on the next chart, using those from 2013 to 2016. So you can see there's some variation depending on whether it's an election year or non-election year. And then we wanted to give you the disclosures that we've received during that initial period, which is that January 1st to February 17th date, the numbers there. And then also the numbers that we received year-to-date through June 30th. And then following those charts, we actually have provided you the disclosures that we received in calendar year for that time period. And this is the format that they appear on the website. And this is a change from the past. We've changed the formatting of that, and so it's by category. For example, the first one in your packet is membership on a board of directors, and it's alphabetical. So if somebody's looking, you know, for a specific individual, they don't have to go through the whole list looking. They can at least look alphabetically and find find that person and see what disclosures they have, for example, on the board of directors on, or on any of the other categories. And so since this was new, we provided this in your packet. Normally, we would not put all of these disclosures, but they are publicly available. And this is what appears on our website. And it, like I said, it's a little bit of a change. We felt like this was a better format for those that are searching the disclosures for what has occurred. And so we're continuing efforts to try and get where each name would have all of the disclosures after it and be alphabetical. Right now, you have to look at the category and then alphabetical. So if you're looking, for example, Jerry Anderson on that, you have to look in the board of directors ones. You have to look in the close economic association ones. You have to look in the state benefit and loan program ones, the state contracts, each of the categories to see if Jerry Anderson had a disclosure for that year. But I think that this is going to be more helpful for the public and those that do follow the disclosures that are being filed as required under our the Legislative Ethics Act. Any comment about any of these disclosures that appear?
One thing I noticed just looking at the gifts of travel and hospitality, I mean, it's a significant reduction in 2016. Do you have any idea of what would account for that? I mean, I'm assuming these are, it's not because people aren't reporting, I'm assuming, but for some other reason.
I think this reflects the economic reality of the state, that there was less travel going on, and also because it was an election year, and we've always seen fewer disclosures filed in an election year for gift of travel and hospitality. Right now, for example, we're getting lots of gifts of travel and hospitality being filed, you know, this month, and we expect more in the coming months. Where there's not an election going on, there's more travel, and so we have more gifts of travel and hospitality disclosures being filed.
Any other comments with respect to the disclosures?
Joyce Anderson, I have a comment. Jerry, I did talk to you about the Close Economic Association.
Oh, yes.
Did you have a chance to follow up on that? Under the Close Economic Association, we had a senator file a CEA, what we call, with another legislator who has no longer in service. And so I had mentioned to Jerry that I believe the statute states that even though, you know, as of January, if you're still there, you have to file for that year. So did you follow up on those two?
Yes, and we believe, and I may defer just to Janice on that, and she can tell me if I'm wrong in my comment here, but I think that both of those did require a corresponding disclosure. In other words, when you have a close economic association, it would, and they're both legislative members, both legislative members should be filing that close economic association. For example, if they're sharing a house in Juneau, if they've got a business together, if they've got some transaction that's $250 or more, they're sharing a phone calling plan, they both should be filing that. Joyce is correct in that two of those filings that we had involved former legislators, one being Lynn Gaddis and the other being Heron, Representative Heron. Former Representative Heron. And so the one that involved Representative Gaddis and Senator Dunleavy, we need to see if that was a continuing transaction. Because of the historical nature of that, we just need to confirm that that was actually happening at that time.
Okay.
Because that was isolated sales between those two that, that caused that Close Economic Association, so.
And former Representative Heron, I think, was ongoing.
Yes, with Senator Hoffman.
Right, and you've contacted him as well.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item, which is the Colville Conference Report. The Colville Conference this past year was in New Orleans. Jerry went, Skip went, and I also went, and you know, it was incredibly well put together conference and extremely informative. First one I'd been to, and that was a mistake in hindsight after seeing how well it's put together. But at any rate, I'll let Gary give his comments with respect to that.
Okay, and COGL is the Conference of Governmental Ethics Laws, and I provided just the first the program guide for that occurred last year, just to give you a flavor of that in the packet. The second item that I included was a blue book effort that they put together. It's a volunteer basis. All of the agencies that are affiliated with COGL put those together, and they give the information. I copied the stuff that was submitted by our office for Alaska, and each of the states have that same information that they're providing to COGL, so it's very, very interesting information. On that in compilations, and sometimes when we're looking at, hey, what are other states doing, you know, they have very valuable information in that booklet that they put together, and so it's very helpful when we go to look at that. And then I included just a newsletter that they come out with during the year, and to give you a flavor of just the other activities that COGL does. And I agree with Connor that it was a very worthwhile conference this last year, and they've put together really good conferences. I know Joyce has been to one of those in the past, and we included the one that they're having this year in your packet. The COGL conference is in Toronto, Canada this year. COGL has both U.S. and Canadian members on it. And so this would have been in the back in the sleeve of it. You should have gotten a copy of the material. And I noticed that Member Fancher is saying that she does not have that. And so, but anyway, if you're interested in that, you might get back with me if you're interested in attending that conference, so we can make those arrangements. If we have registration before October 31st, we save significant amounts of money to go to that, but perhaps Skip would like to make comments about this also.
That was my second conference. Both of them were excellent. I would encourage any members to attend if you can make the time. It'll be excellent again, I'm sure.
Yeah, I would second that, especially the new people to the committee, because it's really an eye opener how much information and knowledgeable people there are doing the same thing that the committee does, and so I think it does allow you to bring a breadth of information when you're looking at our specific issues in the future. Okay, unless there are any other comments, we'll move on. Next item is statutory publications. This is 8F, I guess, and once again, I'll turn it over to Jerry.
You have each received, as part of your materials today, the two blue binder written decisions of both the complaint decisions and the advisory opinions. These are the published ones that we're required to have published by statute. We have cut down significantly on the number of copies that we've actually had published. And has everyone located those? The blue covered. So we distributed one to each of the legislative offices and one to the library of our decisions. But I guess we're asking for a little guidance from the committee on how much of the actual publication that we do. But, you know, when we take them to the print shop, this is the format that we actually have printed up, and for those members that have been here for quite a while, probably have seen these before, but we felt like if we did that, that's probably appropriate, just one to every office as opposed to a distribution and printing beyond that.
Well, and they're available online.
Yes, they are.
Anybody have any thoughts about that? I mean, to me, that seems appropriate, especially since they're available online, and I think probably most people access most of their information online today anyway.
Do I have comments from our legislative members, perhaps on...
Senator Coghill, I think getting it to the offices in print form is important. I'm still old enough where I like reading things on print instead of online. But beyond that, I don't know that it's necessary to print beyond that.
And so, Senator Coghill, you would be in favor of just the one copy to your office as opposed to a copy to every staff member that you have?
Yeah, I think because it's something that a legislator should share with the staff, maybe a staff meeting. But since it's going to collect dust anyway, being passed around the office is no big deal.
Yeah, this is Dennis Egan in Juneau. I agree with John Coghill. We only need one copy, but I think it's important that we have a copy in our office.
And Jerry, you're not talking about not having a copy in the office, right?
No, I still feel that's right. Important that they at least have that. And it was accomplished just by putting it in the mailboxes. You know, the print shop went ahead and did that for us. So, it didn't involve any activity really by us other than just getting them the copy to have printed, and then they provided in each of the mailboxes for the legislators. But rather than a full-scale distribution, I felt like that was appropriate.
Okay.
And I know that legislative budget and audit have asked us about how many copies we've made on three separate occasions. So they're obviously out looking for cost savings on publications.
Okay. So the items that we're talking about here are the advisory opinions and the committee decisions?
Yes, that by statute we're supposed to produce annually.
Any other comments with respect to those items? The next item, also under the same topic, goes the standards of conduct handbook, which those of us here should have. And Jerry, I don't know if you have any comments with respect to that. You've got changes to statute and minor revisions. So
we did issue a revision to the standards of conduct handbook this year. We were delayed because of the actual publication of the official statutes. We had sections that changed in the Legislative Ethics Act, and so it was delayed. We wanted the official LexisNexis version from that, and so it did not occur during our traditional time period, which was the actual training period where we produced it, but after that. And again, with that, we provided it to every office and to new employees, but we did not do a full distribution to every employee of the new, because it's, again, online. And I guess I'm asking for the committee's comments on that, whether we should be producing that in full for every employee, or should we use the distribution that we did this year, which was to provide it to every office one copy, to all new employees, and to provide it to the personnel office a limited number of copies, so if anyone wanted a print copy, they could go pick it up at the personnel office. And of course, if anyone specifically asked us, we provided them a copy, but we did not print, as we showed in our training, we did not print 560 copies of that.
Any committee members have any thoughts with respect to wider distribution than that just outlined by Jerry?
This is Deb Fancher. It would seem to me that in the hopes of saving a few trees, when you have paper, most people aren't old school. I tend to be, and I like things hard copy, but one hard copy seems to be sufficient. Also, you mentioned earlier, Jerry, that you wanted to keep this relatively confidential. If you have it online, it's more, I mean, everyone has access to it, but I don't know how confidential you want to keep it.
Okay, and I can comment on that. The handbook that you receive as a committee member includes more than just the standards of conduct handbook, and so what's being distributed is only a portion of what you have. You obviously have confidential information, including contact information, a calling list, other information that's not part of that.
And just to follow up on that, for those of you that are new to the committee, I think you'll find that this is one of the most important things that you'll have, because it has the statutory references that you'll hear thrown around throughout the day, as well as the procedures that the committee operates by. So it's extremely helpful to getting through the various issues that you'll face. But with respect, with that clarification, which was a good clarification, any other suggestions regarding the distribution, wider distribution? It sounds like people are comfortable with that, Jerry. Any other items that you want to get into with respect to the standards of conduct handbook?
No. As part of that item, though, we had the legislative update coming up next,
right,
and I can address that.
Yeah, okay.
We've provided copies of the, and this is under 8F, or 8G, rather. We provided copies of the statutes that are currently pending that have some relation to the Ethics Committee and to the Legislative Ethics Act, including those portions, of course, of the legislative financial disclosure that's part of the Legislative Ethics Act that is administered by APOC. And so I don't have real comments concerning that. I just wanted the members to be generally aware of the legislation that was pending and that had been introduced.
Mr. Chair, Jai Sanderson, I have a question. Could you let the committee know what changes were made to the Ethics Act?
Yes, in terms of the...
Yes.
That's back to the handbook.
Correct.
Because,
can you just give a...
Because what's in there is just proposed legislation that...
But I thought I heard you say there was some legislation that was approved.
Yes, and that dealt with Senate Bill 24, which was the Senator Gardner's bill that she was on our committee, and that dealt with the ethics requirements for contractors and consultants of the legislature. One of the biggest changes was they are not required to do ethics training at this point in time, and so it changed the definition of independent contractors and consultants in the statutes, and changed the sections of the Ethics Act that were applicable to them. And that was the only change in the Legislative Ethics Act.
Thank you, Jerry. I did know that, but I wanted to
make
that point known for the rest of the committee in case they weren't aware of it. Thank you.
So in just further response, that was a very small change, but we did want to have those updated statutes there, because if that does come up, it is important about what section the independent contractors and consultants are subject to. And the biggest one was the ethics training.
And if I could make a comment, Mr. Chair, it's Joyce Anderson again. The committee also by statute has a role to recommend legislation if they feel that there's a change that needs to be made, and it was very complicated when I was administrator as to whether these independent contractors and consultants and so forth should attend training. And sometimes they had staff that worked for them, and were they required to attend training, you know, and it just sort of mushroomed out a little bit over the years. And so the committee did make a recommendation to make that change. And I think it was a good change. Because it really put a burden on the administrator as to how to administer that particular aspect of it. So I think some of the changes, just for the new members, some of the changes that are in the ethics code have been recommended by the committee based on an administrative point of view, where it's either been difficult to administer or there just didn't seem to be you know, a follow through with ABCD to get to that point and so forth. So that was a good change.
Any other comments with respect to legislative update? Next item is moving on, contract renewal. This is also in your packet. Item 8H, which are, looks like samples of professional contracts that Jerry's included in here. So, Jerry, if you want to...
I did put two samples into the packet for committee members, just to know that what we're actually talking about. These are contracts that the committee had with both an outside counsel and with an investigator. And these were ones that we had in fiscal year 16. But I included those as samples for the committee so they could look at those. It's my suggestion to the committee that we have both an outside counsel contract, and that would be with the same individual that is shown in the sample contract with Brent Cole, a suggested contract in the amount of $10,000. That outside counsel can work on the full committee items or on Senate subcommittee items or on House subcommittee activity as determined by the each of those separate committees. And so they would work on issues where perhaps Ledge Legal has a conflict and could not provide advice to the committee, and also on complaint issues either in the Senate subcommittee or in the House subcommittee, where they would be involved in complaint activities and providing advice on those issues.
Just to comment briefly with respect to actually both of these items is Brent Cole has been our outside counsel for a number of years. In my view, he's done an excellent job. He's been available when needed. I will say that I don't think that there's been very many years where we actually used the full amount of the contract, but you just never can tell what might happen. As Jerry mentioned, I think the fees are likely to be generated more often when you find yourself in a contested complaint of one sort or another where there may be depositions or subpoenas that need to be obtained, and Brent has been the one to do that for us. So I think he's done well by us and been reasonable in his billing. The second contract concerns the investigator. We've used Monique in a number of occasions. She's very thorough, very easy to understand, and produces a good report. You know, I think we've gotten our money's worth from her. Once again, not often do we reach the full amount of the contract. There have been at least on one occasion where we have, but once again, that was a unique situation with a complaint which we have no control over. So personally, I'm in favor of both of those. So if there are any other comments?
I have one additional comment, and that is the dollars that are hourly amounts that are reflected in these contracts from fiscal year 16. I've contacted both of these individuals, both Brent Cole as the outside counsel and Monique Rupuzzi as the investigator, and they are willing to have a contract at those same amounts. And so the amounts would not change from what are shown on the sample contracts that are in the packet.
Jerry, what amount of services have we used this past year compared to anticipated? You know, we have these contracts, there's an expectation. How close are we to that expectation use?
In fiscal year 17, we did not use any funds, either for outside counsel or for a contract investigator. So if you're talking just about the last year, there was none. In the previous year, we did use both of those with regard to activities involving complaints. So fiscal year 16, we did have dollars expended. In 17, we did not. And when we get to the budget items, you'll see that a lot of our budget went unused in that category, or all of it with regard to at least those two items.
Okay. Any other comments with respect to that? With that, I would entertain a motion to approve the contract for Brent Cole. And the amount of $10,000?
So moved.
Any Discussion. Jerry, you want to call the roll, please?
Senator John Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Dennis Egan.
Yes.
Representative David Eastman.
Yes.
Representative Chris Tuck.
Yes.
Member Skip Cook.
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas.
Yes.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Yes.
Member Deb Fancher.
Yes.
Member Lee Holmes.
Yes.
Showing a total of 9 yeas, 0 nays. That would apply both to the Senate subcommittee and to the House subcommittee based on that vote then, as well as the full committee.
Thank you. The next item concerns the investigator, Monique Capuzzi. Once again, entertain a motion to approve the contract with her and the Mountain Mountain Coast Sea Class.
So moved.
Any discussion? Here we call for Member Skip Cook.
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas.
Yes.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Yes.
Member Deb Fancher.
Yes.
Member Lee Holmes.
Yes.
Senator John Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Dennis Egan.
Yes.
Representative David Eastman.
Yes.
Representative Chris Tuck.
Yes.
Showing a tally of 9 votes, 9-0 on that, approving that contract. That would apply both to the full committee, Senate subcommittee, and House committee based on that vote.
Okay. Thank you. The next item on the agenda concerns the budget report. And Jerry, looks like you've got fiscal year 17. And
in your packet on item 8I, I have the budget report fiscal year 17. And on that, if you look to the far right at the bottom, you'll see that our available budget that we did not spend $44,000 of our available funds. And so that was due a little bit to not having committee meetings because, of course, that impacted our travel. We did not have those contracts that are under the code 3000, the services that would include, you know, the independent contracts that we, like what we just approved. We didn't spend any money on that particular issue as part of that. And so, you know, 25,000 of our dollars got unspent there. Overall, we I believe we're very fiscally responsible with the budget that we had. And so that should be the final numbers for our fiscal year 17. For fiscal year 18, we have a total budget of $253,500 that was approved. So it's just slightly above the amount from our fiscal year 17 of $251,000. I anticipate spending more money in fiscal year 18, of course. Comments? Representative Eastman?
I think it might go to later in the meeting when we talk about future meetings and the frequency of them, and that's going to be a question I'll have. What's a reasonable expectation of how often we can meet when we have business to do?
That's a very good question. We don't have a meeting schedule, and so we generally the practice has been to meet when we have a specific business that needs to be taken care of, and some of the business that we address has to be done in person. And so generally we try to combine a full subcommittee meeting, of course, with a subcommittee, either a House or a Senate subcommittee meeting where there is a matter that needs to be taken up where you need to be in person. So, and with that, we generally also try to have a meeting in Juneau right at the beginning of the session, especially during the years where there needs to be training, because the people that are on the Ethics Committee also have to have training. So historically, I would say we've run about 3 meetings a year. Maybe. Joyce, do you think that's about accurate?
Could be anywhere from 3 to 6, depending on
what needs to be addressed.
There's been some years
where there's been more, but you know, obviously this past year, and I think you'll see today when we get into these opinions that we're going to discuss, some of the things it's difficult to do over the telephone in order to have a real discussion with respect to some of the nuances that are addressed in these opinions. And so it's generally better in my experience to try to do those in-person meetings. But I think that being on the committee, you can expect that there should be more than one a year. There could be a number more depending on what happens, but that's out of our control. But I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of three is kind of the average, unless you've got something else.
That sounds like a great plan.
With one in June.
So. Okay, sure. Definitely support that, and whatever we can do to minimize going a year at a time without meeting.
Yeah, that's a problem. I agree.
Mr. Chair, the only other thing I want to mention for the new members is that the fiscal year starts on July 1st. I think you might not be aware of that. I see over here making notes. So begins on July 1st and ends on June 30th. So that's why we're talking fiscal year 17, and now we're in fiscal year 18.
Jerry, Connor Thomas, one question. In terms of the budget breakdown, the itemization, personal services, is that services for, you know, wages for you and Janice, for example, or does that include the contracts that we just approved?
No, the only items that would have included would be, for example, Janice and myself, and then when we had Joyce as a independent contractor at one point in time, not during, I believe, this fiscal year, but previously, it would have included her also, but not our independent counsel or our investigator.
Okay, and that would come out of the services portion of
yes.
the itemization.
Yes, that's correct, and that's why that was largely unspent. Mm-hmm. And the travel, of course, if we had our meetings as anticipated, a more of a normal schedule, we probably would have eaten all of that budget up. And, of course, that depends on just the makeup of the committee and where we're holding our meetings.
Any other questions, comments with respect to the budget? Anything else, Jerry, with regard to the budget?
No, I don't have no further comment.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is item 9, state benefit and loan program. Jerry will give you the sort of the background with respect to this. This is an item that needs to be addressed by the committee annually. It looks like there's just one program that we'll need to address today. But if you want to explain to people, Jerry, why this is on here.
Sure. And again, this is item 9 in your packet. The first item that I've included there is just a sample letter, just kind of the generic form that we use when we send out letters to each of those that are under the state benefit and loan program. And if a legislative employee has a loan or has a benefit under one of the programs that have been identified and has to make a disclosure, there's a list of those. And that is in the appendix in your appendix C in your book. So if you have your booklet, it will show all of the programs that require a disclosure if a legislative member or a legislative staffer is participating in one of those. They have to file a disclosure with our office. And, of course, earlier we talked about the disclosures that have been made year to date. Well, this would be one of those disclosures. And so there's each of those departments. For example, the Department of Administration has programs, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, loans, and each of those that are listed in that Appendix C, and there's three pages of those. If you're participating in any of those, you need to file a disclosure with the Ethics Office. And so to determine whether or not that list is current, we send out letters each October to each of these agencies and say, hey, does that program exist any longer? Or do you have other programs that you've instituted that should go on that list, and it's based on the letter that we have in the packet. So we inform them, hey, if you've got any of those that, for example, have disappeared, and this year we did have one that did disappear, and that was the Alaska Aerospace Corporation Scholarship Program. And that actual review form is in your packet. So you should have that. It should be the last page of this section. And you can see the letter that they send back to us saying, hey, we should consider removing that from the list because it no longer exists. And so the vote that we're going to be asking to have you take is to remove that program from the Appendix C list and based on this letter and based on the review that we've done. And that is the only change that we have for the committee to look at. Normally this would be done in January, and so we're going to be sending letters back out again in October, early November, to each of these agencies asking about any changes that they may have had to their programs. And we get responses such as this one from time to time. It's not real often that we have changes, but it does occur, and that's why the committee reviews these, is to see, yeah, are they still appropriate? And so staffers can look at the list of programs and say whether or not they're participating in any of those and whether they need to file a disclosure, either legislative staffers or legislators.
Mr. Chair, this is Joyce Anderson. I know that Ever and I were talking a little bit here. Did you explain why these programs are on the list for the new members?
Well, it's based on a statutory
right. I just didn't know. I thought maybe it might be helpful for the new members to just give them a two-minute background on why they're on the list.
Yeah, and these basically are to look at and disclose any influence that legislative members or staffers might have based upon their participation in any of these programs. And so these are ones where there's discretion available as opposed to fixed objective eligibility standards and requires minimal discretion. Pretty much the language that's in 2460.050 and your statutes under A. So it lays out the exact criteria that we're looking at in A. And it says, one, that where, for example, they have a benefit program or receive a loan from the state, if the program or loan is generally available to members of the public, it's subject to fixed objective eligibility standards and requires minimal discretion in determining qualification. They don't have to disclose. But if it has, you know, any of the reverse of those, which is there is discretion in it, in other words, could they be getting by undue influence a loan or a state benefit. That's why the disclosure is required. And whether it's as opposed to fixed objective eligibility standards, if it was not fixed, if it was purely by discretion of that agency. And so that's the list that you have before them. They do not meet those standards that are in the statute. The list of those programs,
if I may.
Certainly. If you would go ahead and just tap your, thank you.
This is Representative Tuck, and I noticed that right-of-way permits underneath the Department of Transportation, but that does not apply to right-of-way permits through the municipalities. So we don't have any of those type of conflicts with the municipalities. I am going to be applying for a right-of-way permit through the municipality of Anchorage,
right.
Not to the Department of Transportation, so I would not be required to file an ethics.
Yeah, it's only under that department.
Under state departments, but not local governments.
Right, that's my understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions with respect to this? Generally, when we're faced with this question to remove a program from the list, you would spend your time reviewing the criteria that Jerry just mentioned to determine whether or not there was discretion. However, it looks like in this case that the program's simply just been eliminated. So I don't think it requires the same type of analysis that we generally run through. So with that, I would entertain a motion to remove the Alaska Aerospace Corporation Scholarship Program from the list of state benefit and loan review that must be reported.
So moved.
Any discussion or objection? Hearing none, then the motion carries. The Alaska Aerospace Corporation Scholarship Program is removed from the list. So, Kerry, anything else you want to discuss before we move into executive session?
I do not have anything at this time.
Okay. The next portion of the agenda is executive session. We're going to take up a number of advisory opinions or discuss a number of advisory opinions, which by law must remain confidential. So I would entertain at this time a motion to move into executive session.
Mr. Chair, I have one comment before we do that.
Certainly.
I think it's important to put on the agenda as to, you know, matters by which by law must remain confidential. We should say under the particular statute so that people are aware why we're going into executive session, which would be under the advisory opinion. I know that I think that's been done in the past, and I think just to make it clear and above board, that's why we're going into executive session.
Okay. So,
and I so move that we go into executive
okay,
session.
Okay, and under the advisory opinion section?
Yes.
That would be AS 2460-160.
Yes.
160. With that, are there any objections? Okay. Hearing none, then we'll move into executive session and make sure the doors are closed and people that are not required to be here will not.
Yep.
And certainly, there's been a request to take a 5-minute break. We'll take a 10-minute break just to make sure everybody can do what they need to do. So with that, we'll be back in executive session in 5 minutes to 10.
Dan Wayne, I can't hear you.
Dan, we're going to be taking up back in public session here for just a few minutes. At the conclusion of the public session for the full committee, we're going to be taking up the Senate subcommittee of hearing. And first part, of course, is a public session, but we'll be going into executive session in that. And, of course, we would not anticipate you, Dan Wayne, being part of that.
No.
Back in public session, the time is 12:30. Today's date, the 16th of August, 2017. Two items left to deal with, which concerns formal advisory opinion AO-1503, which advises whether it is proper to send legislative communications to email addresses that is not identifiable with respect to whether it is within the district boundaries of that legislator. We're required to have a roll call vote to concur or not concur with the draft opinion as revised. A vote yes will be a vote to concur with the draft opinion. A vote of no will be to not concur with the draft opinion. So with that, I would ask Jerry to call the roll. Once again, this is AO-1503. Which concerns communications to an email address.
Member Deb Fancher.
Yes.
Member Lee Holm.
Yes.
Senator John Cogdell.
Yes.
Senator Dennis Egan.
Yes.
Representative David Eastman.
Yes.
Representative Chris Cox.
Yes.
Member Skip Cook.
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas.
Yes.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Yes.
That vote to concur with the draft advisory opinion, 9-0.
Thank you. The next matter is the formal advisory opinion of AO-1701, advises whether a legislator can accept the gift of interim office space in a shopping mall. A roll call to vote or not. Concur with a roll call vote to concur or not to concur with the draft opinion as amended in executive session. A vote of yes will be a vote to concur with the amended draft opinion. A vote of no will be to not concur with the draft opinion. So, Jerry, if you will once again call the roll, please.
Member Lee Holmes.
Yes.
Senator John Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Dennis Egan.
Yes.
Representative David Eastman.
No.
Representative Chris Tuck.
Yes.
Member Skip Cook.
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas.
Yes.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Yes.
Member Deb Fancher.
Yes.
That 8-1 to concur with the amended advisory opinion.
Okay, we'll move on to the next item, which is item 17, which is other business, which is next meeting. As you can see, we did not get through with the all the advisory opinions, which I guess we thought was a real possibility. So we're asking people to take a look at their calendars. There's been a suggestion from Jerry. I'll let him speak for himself. That maybe we'd be looking for another meeting the middle part of October. And of course, as has been pointed out earlier, there's been some talk of a special session, so that would have to be take precedence.
The specific date that we're looking at is October 17th, 2017, and of course, subject to that special session call, if any.
Jerry, I have a conflict on that day. My mom is retired. I'm taking her to Mexico. I'm not available after the 15th. I could do the 9th or the 2nd. Either one of those days, Monday the 9th, would be great.
Joyce?
I'm okay with the 9th.
The week of the 9th? On the 17th, are you available? Representative Chuck.
Yes, I'm available.
Representative Eastman. Member Lee Holmes.
I'm available on the 17th.
Senator John Coghill.
I'm okay on 17th, but I'm also okay on the 9th.
Senator Dennis Egan.
Yeah, I'm okay on both ideas.
Lee Holmes again. I am out of state the end of September till the 13th.
Does the chair have a suggestion that you want a different alternate date? That we had also looked at dates in November, but I know from your personal calendar that you said that you were unavailable during that time, and I had not gone any further.
That would be great for me.
Okay.
How about the 25th of September?
No, in September would not work just because of other items that we have. So we're really looking at an October date. Do you wish to poll on the 23rd?
Sure.
23rd is being a Monday?
Is it 23rd? Or?
I'm gone.
Oh.
When will you do that? I'm back on the 29th. Or actually, I'm back on the 27th, so I can do the 30th or 31st. Probably not Halloween. The 30th would be great.
If I may, as Representative Tuck, just wanted to know that if there is a special session, it'll be after AFN. AFN dates is October 18th to the 20th. So we're going into possibly, and I actually at this time think that it'd be very unlikely that we'll have a special session. But just be aware that if it does get called, we'll know 30 days in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with the date.
October.
Yeah, and just know that by September 30th, if the governor will know by September 30th that we need to change that.
I can poll on October 30th.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm good.
October 30th, Joyce?
Mm-hmm. Wahoo.
Yes?
Yeah.
Deb Fancher, yes?
Yes.
Skip, yes. Connor?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Lee Holmes?
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
Yes.
Senator Dennis Egan on the 30th of October. That is a Monday.
Yeah, depending on if that's their special session or not.
Okay. And Senator Coghill.
Okay with me.
That appears that we would have everyone on October 30th where we could do a the next one on October 30th.
Okay. Well, that's, mark your calendars. That's the date. And we're sticking with it. So. That, we don't want to be in this boat again.
That would be at 8, starting at 8:30 on that date.
Starting at 8:30, and I assume the meeting would be here and in this space. Is that correct?
Yes. It would only require committee action if the legislature was in session in Juneau, where we'd have to have the approval of the committee to have it outside of Juneau if they're in session.
So are we 8:30 to 12:30 or 8:30 to 12:30?
Well,
I'm blocking out the whole day.
I mean, we got through two today. I know we didn't start till 10, but.
Yeah. All right. I believe then that we're at the final.
Okay. Anything else? Any other business where I ask for a motion to adjourn the public session? Seeing none, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion made by Lee Holmes. The meeting is adjourned. The public meeting is of the full committee is adjourned at 12:38. Thank you all so much. And for those of you that are on the Senate subcommittee, we'll be taking that up next.
And for those House members, you're welcome to additional. Just grab a little lunch on the way out. We'll see you back then at 1 o'clock. Meeting.
All right. This is Skip Cook, chair of the Senate subcommittee, calling this meeting to order at 12:47 on August 16, 2017. And welcome to those members who are attending, and we'll ask Jerry to call the roll.
Senator Gary Stevens as the alternate to Senator John Coghill. Senator Stevens, are you with us on the conference call? Yes. Are you in the LIO building?
No, I'm in Kodiak.
Okay. I know that you do not have the materials that we have on this. I'm going to ask Janice to try and get those to you if she has those available while I do the other administrative task. And I understand that you're filling as the alternate due to a conflict from Senator John Coghill.
That's my understanding, but Jerry, I'm at home, so I don't have access to that information. There's no reason for to send it. I hope you can share it with me online, on air.
All right. Well, we'll have some discussion of the materials. Senator Dennis Egan.
Here.
Member Skip Cook.
Here.
Member Connor Thomas.
Here.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Here.
Member Deb Fancher.
Here.
Member Lee Holmes.
Here.
With that, we have a forum to conduct business with five public members and two Senate legislative members.
Thank you. This is John Coghill as well. I figured I'd better chime in, let you know that I'm here and that I was prepared to declare what the conflict is. Unless you don't need me, which I can leave.
I think it would probably be appropriate to explain the conflict that you have, Senator, at this time.
Well, we're in public session.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. With that, because of the nature of this, we're still in public session, and so if you would hold off until we go into executive session. I'm sorry. The public members have reminded me of that. I'm very sorry.
Can you stand by for this moment?
Senator Coghill, can you stand by for just a moment?
Will do.
All right. Let's move on then to approval of the agenda. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda? If not, we'll consider it to be appropriate. We'll move on to public comment. Is there anyone who wishes to speak to the subcommittee? If so, please identify yourself. We have nobody here in the LIO in Anchorage. Is there anybody online who wishes to speak to the committee? Hearing none, we'll move on to executive session. Keep in mind that attendance in an executive session will be limited to the members of the committee and essential personnel as determined by the committee. In cases of discussion, investigation, data gathering, interviews, deliberations, or decision-making on complaints prior to probable cause determination, neither the subject of the complaint nor any legislator not on the appropriate subcommittee shall be allowed in the executive session. So let's set up for executive session, if we could have a motion to do so.
So moved.
Moved by Connor. Any objection? Hearing none, let's go ahead and make those arrangements quickly. Are we all set here? Okay.
Are the signs on the door then?
We're back in public session. Are Juno folks online? Senator Stevens, you there?
Yeah, Senator Egan's here.
And Senator Stevens? In Kodiak? Not bumped?
Oh, he might
have. He dropped off. All right. We're back in public session. If there's no further business, the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn the public session. So moved. Any objection? Without objection, we are adjourned.
Noting the time at 1:36 p.m. We're now going to take up the House Subcommittee Eastman. Member Skip Cook.
Here.
Member Connor
Here.
Thomas.
Here.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Here.
Deb Fancher.
Here.
Member Lee Holmes.
Here.
With that, Representative Chris Tuck does not appear. We're trying to locate Representative Tuck, but with five public members and one legislative member, we have a quorum at this time.
Okay, thank you. You have a copy of the agenda in your packet. I would ask whether or not there are any changes or additions to the agenda. Seeing none, I would ask for a motion to approve the agenda. Moved by Skip Cook. Any objections? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. Next item is public comment. Is there anyone that wishes to speak to the subcommittee? There is not anybody here in the building. I'm not aware of anybody online. So there does not appear to be anybody that wants to speak to the subcommittee at this time. At this time, I would entertain a motion to go into executive session to discuss matters which by law must remain confidential.
So moved.
Any objection? Hearing none, I'd ask Janice to put up the signs on the door, and any members of the public must leave the conference room. There are no members here. So once we mute our telephones and put up the signs, we'll be moving forward in executive session. Thank you. Once again, we're now back in the House Subcommittee is back in the public session. The time is 4:05. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Any objections? Hearing none. Committee's adjourned at 4:10. Thank you so much for your participation throughout the day. And I know it's been a long day, and I know everybody appreciates the thought that went into it by all the committee members. So thank you, and until October, this should be it. So we're adjourned.